You may recall a few weeks back that I spoke to you about the name change that Avram underwent from Avram to Avraham, and the name change Yaakov went from Yaakov to Yisrael. This week's Parsha continues with the same theme of changing of names, and it's a very eventful Parsha, as you know. And you all recall, I'm sure, you know, Yosef is dragged up from prison and he interprets Paro's mysterious dreams. He's made viceroy of Egypt, responsible for the preparing for an upcoming famine and then overseeing the response of the government to the famine. The brothers come to acquire sustenance food from Egypt because there's a famine in Canaan too, Israel. And Yosef sees them. They don't recognize him. He recognizes them. And Yosef begins a series of complex plans in order to bring a confrontation, so to speak, between him and them, and a reconciliation. And he works things out so that Binyamin is brought to him, then falsely accused falsely of stealing his gavia, his goblet. And he wants to keep Binyamin with him, and of course, thereby disturbing to no end his father, who would be even more distraught because he already lost Yosef himself, but he was dead, two sons of his beloved wife, Rachel. So it's a very eventful Parsha, and my portal into the Parsha will be this issue of name changing. Because, first of all, Yosef now, like his father, acquires new names. Tzafnas Paneach and Avrech, we'll see about what they mean in just a minute. But he acquires new names, and he also grants names to his two children, Menashe and Ephraim. If you think about it, naming it is a very significant motif in all of Sefer Bereishis. Adam names Chava, he names all the animals. That's the Torah addresses that specifically. There's Avram's name, Avram, Avraham, Sarai, Sarah, Yaakov, Yisrael. There is the name, that significance of Yitzchak's name, laughter. So names and name chain, and of course all the names, the explanation for the names for all the Shvatim, names are very significant motif, theme in Sefer Bereishis. And I'm going to build on that and reflect about the names in this week's parsha, as I say, is a kind of a portal into understanding some of the larger, possibly understanding some of the larger themes in Yosef's life. So let's begin with the names that Yosef gives his children. He marries Asnas Bas Potipharah, Kohen On, the Asnas, the daughter of Potipharah, who was the priest of On. He has two children. The name of his Bechor is Menashe. Ki nashani Elokim es kol amolai v'es kol beis avi. The name Menashe derives from the word nashani. The question, of course, is what is the meaning of that term? And it is rather opaque. It's an unusual term. The Mefarshim will struggle to understand what it means. Rashi says that it means jumping. Kinashani Elokim es kol amolai v'es kol beisi. I jump from all of my toil and from the house of my father. The Sforna, as do other Mefarshim, say this is probably the most common translation. It means I forgot. As the Sforna says, he forgot all of his early tzoros. Now, the Medrash Bereishis Rabbah takes that same reading of Menashe as forgetfulness, but gives it a very interesting and provocative, in some ways, I think, challenging or difficult twist. The Medrash compares Yaakov to Yosef. Yaakov, despite all those years serving and working for Lavan, decades, the Medrash says Yaakov never forgot his Torah. Yosef, on the other hand, Ki nashani Elokim, Hashem caused me to forget, he says, all of my Torah. Unlike Yaakov, who didn't forget anything, Yosef, as a result of all of his travails and his sale and his living in Mitzrayim, he forgot the whole of the Torah. That's what the Medrash says. And so the Medrash is following the Sforna's interpretation of forgetfulness. However, if you think about it, the Medrash is really quite puzzling. It may very well be true that he forgot his Torah. I don't really know. That's what the Medrash says. But why would anyone name his child after forgetting the whole of the Torah? I can think of many reasons to give a child a name. That's not exactly the most complimentary of names. You say, oh, Menashe, I'm naming you my son because I forgot all my Torah. Like, why would anybody want to give a child a name which says that he forgot all of his Torah? It's just like a very, very surprising and puzzling name. Why celebrate? Give a child a name, it's celebratory. Why celebrate the Torah you forgot? So the matter is really kind of hard to understand. The Netziv, the Hamek Davar, in his parish on the Torah, he works with, he doesn't mention the Sforna, but he's working with the Sforna's interpretation. And he provides a really interesting explanation, which I think is quite psychologically penetrating. He says that Yosef was blessing his forgetfulness. Why was he blessing his forgetfulness, which is really what the Sforna says? Because if he hadn't forgotten all of the trauma to which he was subject, he would never have been capable of the success he achieved. He would have been haunted by the trauma of having been thrown into a pit by his brothers and sold and got into servitude. And those are traumatic events. You might have suffered, in modern terms, from post-traumatic stress syndrome. If he had kept those memories alive. And so, he's blessing Hashem, Kinashani Elokim, Hashem, you made it possible for me to forget all Amalai, to forget all that I lost, to forget my family, so that I could move ahead in life. That's a really interesting interpretation. And it raises, I think, yes, as Avram says, forgetfulness can be a blessing. That's exactly what the Netziv says. And, you know, we have some psychotherapists, I think, on this room, and this is a kind of a broader question. To what extent is forgetfulness of trauma helpful or harmful? One might argue that at one level, if it constantly haunts you, then you can't move ahead in life and you're stuck. And so it's better to kind of repress it or forget it. Others might argue that if you forget it or repress it, you don't deal with it, so that it doesn't haunt you, at some level it may come back to tackle you in an unexpected way. So some might argue they need to get it out of your system. You need to confront it and deal with it rather than forget it. I remember once I had a conversation with a psychoanalyst, person who was studying psychoanalysis, social worker. And in order to become a psychoanalyst, you need to become analyzed. And so this goes back many years, and she was saying that psychoanalysis, and I'm using the jargon of psychoanalysis, although some of this jargon has become part of popular culture, psychoanalysis is very, very good at deconstructing our defense mechanisms. We all have defense mechanisms for coping with life. You know, we deal with things through various defense mechanisms. Forgetting is one of the defense mechanisms, amongst many others. And she said psychoanalysis, she thought, was quite effective at exposing her inner life by taking apart those defense mechanisms which enabled her to cope. But she said the problem is they don't put you back together again. So you're left entirely exposed, and that was too painful for her. So, you know, I think of that comment, which is interesting, and I will let you reflect about it, suggest that you reflect about it. But in any case, you know, I'm not so sure to what extent forgetfulness is good or bad, but at least the Netziv thinks that in the case of Yosef, it was helpful. So that's the Netziv's interpretation, and I find it to be very, very interesting. However, it doesn't really, I think, fully explain why he would name his son after forgetfulness. Like, that seems like still an odd thing to do, right? Okay, I hear you need to forget the past if it's traumatic in order to move ahead. Why name a child after your forgetfulness? So I'm not sure I'm completely satisfied, as penetrating an explanation as it is. I'm not sure I'm completely satisfied with it, nor, of course, does it address the Medrash about forgetting Torah. So I think we still have some work to do. Let me continue to develop and pursue this theme with you. So Menashe's name is also kind of fraught with mixed messages, good, bad, forget, not forget, how do you forget? But if that's true as well of Ephraim's names. Look at Ephraim's name. That's Shem Hasheni Kara Ephraim. Why ki Ephrani Elokim be'eretz anyi? Because Hashem made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Now, that too is a mixed message. On the one hand, Ephrani Elokim, Hashem made me capable of being fertile, of reproducing. Be'eretz anyi. So the name, as Yosef gives it, reflects both blessing, but also a frontal acknowledgement that it's Be'eretz anyi, it's the land of his infliction. So it's again, it's why name a child in a way that marks both the negativity of forgetting a terrible past, like being thrown into the pit by your brothers, and or forgetting the Torah, as the Medrash says, or Be'eretz anyi, why name a child after affliction? Why should that be a part of the child? So some questions about the names that Yosef gives his kids, and I think it's hardly uninteresting that Yosef's own names carry the same ambivalence. It's not just the names he gives his kids, children, that have an ambivalent quality to them, but his own name, has an ambivalent quality as well. Let me read the pasuk where Rachel is born. Vatahar vatelet bein, Rachel, after so many years of deprivation, finally has a child after Leah has had so many children and all the other shvachos have had children. She says, Vatomer asaf Elokim escherpasi. Hashem has gathered up my shame. Batikra eshmo Yosef Lamar, she called his name Yosef. Yosef Hashem li bein acher. May Hashem add to for me another child. So here's part of the meaning of the name is Asaf escherpasi. The name itself suggests shame. Kharpasi, my shame. It as well is a tefillah for the future, having another child. So Yosef's name itself has built into it this negative as well as positive side, this cherpa, shame over the past, infertility, as well as a tefillah over the future. So Yosef's own, the ambivalence built into Yosef's own name is in turn transferred into the ambivalence that Yosef invests in his children's name. So I think that that is not insignificant. So how are we to understand this? So I'm going to suggest one reading that I offer to you for food for thought. Let's go back to Yosef's beginnings. He was a pampered child. He got the multicolored coat pampered by a father, an elderly father. In other words, he was one of the last of the children born. And as Yosef grew up, Yaakov became older and older. He was, in a sense, pampered by that father because he was the older son of the wife he loved the most. Love at first sight. When he first found Rachel, he immediately fell in love with her, worked for her for 14 years, pretty long time to work for a wife. And then eventually she dies. So he had a special, special relationship with Yosef. And Yosef's life, in a sense, in Yosef, he saw his deceased, Yosef's deceased beloved mother. Yosef was as well the product from the mother's perspective of a a woman desperate to have children, from Yaakov, so that she could be a partner in the creation of Klal Yisrael. And that was the part of the tefillah of his name. May Hashem give me another child. So what you have here are two parents, each one in his or her own way, needing Yosef. Rachel needing Yosef to have a child, to be a partner with Yaakov in the future of Klal Yisrael. And Yaakov, in raising Yosef, doting upon him as the oldest son of his beloved departed wife. And now Yosef was obviously, as we see from all the parshas, an exceptionally talented man. He was given chen by Hashem as one of his brachas that he got. As we see from the brachas in the end of the parsha, he had a great deal of chen, a great deal of incredible talent, very talented person. But remember that his very name, Asaf Hashem Eskarpasi, reflected the desperation of a mother for a child. And in turn, Yaakov, as Yaakov raised Yosef, projected onto Yosef a great future as the oldest son of his beloved and deceased wife. Consider the burdens that Yosef as a young boy carried. The death of his mother who wanted the future for him, his father who wants the future for him, who has great faith in his talent because he's the charismatic, full of chen son of his beloved wife. And Yosef grows up in a difficult place. And the crucial question, or one crucial question that I would suggest to you in thinking about Yosef's growth and development is, to what extent was Yosef Yosef? And to what extent was Yosef the screen onto which his parents projected their aspirations and needs for him? All parents raise their children with certain expectations, certain hopes, certain aspirations. If a child is very talented, then especially parents project on them. I mean, imagine, for example, just giving you one simple example, a common example. Let's say you have a parent who's not particularly well educated and has a kind of a low level sort of menial job. And these parents, both of them, and these parents have a very gifted child. Now, the mom, let's say, or the dad really wanted to be a surgeon or a physician or, a great politician or whatever they aspire to, but they couldn't do it because they just didn't have the advantages of education and they were kind of confined in their capacity. Maybe they wanted to be a great, opera singer or a great pianist or a great actor, but their life didn't work out. And then they see they have a child with certain talents. Well, those parents are going to project onto that very talented child, man or young boy or young girl, the future that they never really had or that they aspired to but couldn't achieve. And so the child becomes a screen onto which parents project their hopes and aspirations for that child. It's not an uncommon phenomenon. It's not exactly the case here with Yosef, but it is the case that Yosef is named after his mother's aspirations. Somebody asked how old Burdette Yosef was when Rachel passed away. Young, but I don't know how old, but certainly less than 17. Actually, probably quite a young child, I would think. But surely he knew what his mother would have wanted for him. And he sees Yaakov, his father, giving him the special code and treating him specially. So he has both the burden of talent, just a burden, a gift, a burden, as well as the burden of carrying forward his parents' expectations. And that comes out in his dreams. Dreams, everybody bows down to him. Where do the dreams come from? Do they come entirely from his own self-confidence? Or do they come because his mother and father would have expected him to achieve such great years, such great accomplishments? And many, many children grow up with parental expectations, which shapes their destiny. And I think that in many ways was Yosef's challenge. Could Yosef rise on his own to achieve greatness, not because mommy and daddy expected it of him, because he had the talent, but because he himself adopted of his own volition, maturely, autonomously, thoughtfully, the course of life that his parents had imagined for him. I see it often, by the way, something like this in college, in my school. Shmuel comes to me as a freshman and says, I want to be a doctor. Okay, why do you want to go into medical school? Why do you want to be a physician? Well, that's what my parents want me to be. That's an awful reason for becoming a physician. Somebody should become a physician because that's what they want to do. They need to be exposed to, the medical profession. They need to volunteer in a hospital. They need to be an EMT. They need to do lots of things so that they can really know what it is and choose it because that's what they want to do. You can't make life's choices only because mommy and daddy want you to make those choices. They can sometimes be bad choices. The Yosef's challenge as an exceptionally gifted man, gifted by Hashem, with chen, with talent, he had to sort that through. And I would suggest to you that part of the Parshios is the saga of the evolution of Yosef from that young boy burdened with both talent as well as burdened by being the screen on which his parents projected what they legitimately thought should be his destiny, so that it became his screen and not their screen. So the first step is he had to get thrown into a pit twice. In order to leave that past, it had to, in effect, cease to exist for him. In order for him to independently and maturely choose his own life, he had to abandon by going into a pit, as it were, the pit of the sale that his brothers threw him into, the pit of the prison. He had to get rid of that past because he could never go forward as long as that hovered over him. That past continued to hover over him. And he had to lose the privileged position of his youth. Doting father, spoiled by the father. How could he ever grow up if he's going to constantly be in the orbit of a father who gives him special treatment? Of course, his father loves him. He can never become a person on his own as long as he's in that orbit. And so the first step is to get out of that orbit. And in order to do that, where there was this dramatic sale, rupture, being thrown into a pit by his very own brothers. And that is to smash the old dreams. The brothers are not bowing down to him. If you are a dirty prisoner in a smelly pit, that's not happening. So that enables them to get past the kind of harmful, I would say, set of expectations until such time as he could create those expectations for himself. Zachar es Yosef ayishkacheu. He had to be forgotten totally. Everything had to be forgotten. It had to be a tabula rasa, a new beginning. And after that, being thrown into a pit, there could begin the slow, difficult process of the reconstruction of an autonomous, mature self. And that happens. Yosef's talent emerges again and again, and emerges. He's finally brought to Paro, and Paro, he gets two names. Let's look at those two names. The first name is Tzafnas Paneach, which is the way Paro saw him, as a diviner of hidden secrets. And Yosef was the one who was able to read the dreams. He was a diviner of hidden secrets. That was Paro. For Paro, Yosef was a seer. And Avrech is the other name he got, which many Mepharshim say means from Birkayim or knees. They bow down on their knees to Yosef because he ascended to the role of viceroy and second in command of the entire country. So Yosef ascends to greatness acknowledged by Paro in one respect. For Paro, he was a seer, he was a Tzafnas Paneach, and for the Egyptian population, he was an Avre. He was somebody whom they had to bow down in obedience. And those new names tell the story of his life, or part of the story of his life. From the Asaf Hashem Escharpasi, the shame that his mother felt projected onto him, the expectations for him and his father's love of his mother who died. That was one stage in his life. Next stage in his life is to acquire a new set of names reflecting this new stature in his life. He lost the old name, Yosef. He got a new name, Avrech and Tzafnas Paneach. But this rehabilitation of self, or construction of self, better yet, was only partial. Why do I say that? Because somebody else is still telling a story. Who gave him his names? He didn't give it to himself. Paro gave him the names. The people called him Avrech. So while Yosef had moved beyond the narrative spun of his life, spun by his remarkable parents, Yaakov and Rachel, he was still in a place where other people were telling his stories. Paro was calling him Tzafnas Paneach, because that's who he was for Paro. And everybody else was calling him Avrech, because that's who he was for them. That's great. That's another stage in his development, but Yosef is still not telling his own story. When does he tell his own story? When he names his children. The gift of naming others is for Yosef the gift of self-creation. The gift of naming others for Yosef was the gift of self-creation, and that marks the final step in the evolution of Yosef's from the spoiled young child to a mature, brilliant, autonomous adult who manages the affairs of his family, his brother in Egypt, because he has gained the capacity of giving names. And what are those names? Now we come to that puzzling, back to that puzzling medrash, Bereishis Rabbah, he forgot his Torah. But why is that something you celebrate? What I think this may mean, is what Yosef is saying, not that Yosef forgot all of the Torah. It seems unlikely. I mean, he had a rough time, but he was very close with his father. They spent a lot of time together. He said, he forgot everything. It seems to be unlikely on the face of it. So what does the Medrash mean? What I think the Medrash may mean is that he forgot the Torah as being his father's Torah, and he acquired the Torah on his own. It became Yosef's Torah. Kinashani, remember, it says Shani Elokim. That's the pasuk. Hashem enabled me to forget my role as the spoiled child and student of a beloved father and to reconstitute, to reaffirm, to appropriate the Torah of his parents to his own Torah. He's not celebrating forgetfulness. What he's celebrating is his capacity to be mimekabel Torah as Yosef, as his own person. Not to be mekabel Torah as a screen on which his parents projected all of their expectations and aspirations. That's celebratory. Kinashani Elokim. Hashem made it possible for me to evolve from that young boy who was misalsil and made himself look pretty to the great leader of Egypt who kept his faith and emunah in Hashem despite the most challenging circumstances. Again and again, he says, I am not a poser halomos. I don't. Hashem interprets the dreams. Hashem, he always talks about Hashem. It was his Torah now. It was a Torah that he was able to acquire and make his own in the adversity of Mitzrayim. Back home, it never would have been his. It would have been mommy and daddy's Torah. He had to get thrown into a pit. He had to be challenged by Mitzrayim and the assimilation into Mitzrayim. Until finally, it could be Nashani Elokim. It's not a Torah that was meaningless to me. That I forgot. It's my Torah. I autonomously affirm that Torah as my own. I think that may be what he's celebrating. It may be what the Medrash possibly, maybe what it means. And if you look at the names, Nashani, one crucial step in his rehabilitation or reconstruction, and the second one is Ephraim, talking about a new future for himself. That's the theme I've been developing, a fruitfulness, a new future. And here I want to make a point, which I don't think is, I've not seen noticed, but I think there's a lot of truth. I mean, I think there's truth to this. If you think about it, these two names, Menashe and Ephraim, reflect the two reasons for the names of Yosef. Remember, I read you the psukim. There were two reasons that Rachel gave for naming Yosef, Yosef. Ki asaf Hashem escher pasi. Hashem cured, gathered my shame by giving me another child. And the second reason, Hashem Yosef, Hashem should give me more children. One is past directed. Asaf Hashem escher pasi. Just like Nashani Elokim is past directed. The past is over. Rachel is saying the past is over. Asaf Hashem escher pasi. I'm no longer ashamed. I can move into Yosef Hashem. I can move into a new future. Just as the ambivalence in Yosef's name, the duality of Yosef's name, reflects a duality of past overcome for Rachel and a new future of expectations, so too the two names that Yosef gave his children exactly reflect that duality. Nashani Elokim, the past is over. And then Ephraim, there was a new future. So Yosef took his own, the duality of his own name, and drew from that duality in investing new meaning to the names of his children, which reflect his own evolution from the old Yosef to not only the Avreich and Safnas Paneach, but the great ruler who can recapitulate his own past in the healing of his children. And that healing reflects, the names of his children reflects the construction of Yosef's life over the challenges that he faced. Yosef reappropriated. He reappropriated the message of his mother. Past shame, hope for the future. He took his beloved mother's message and he reappropriated into his own life. As a mature, autonomous adult. He didn't just leave mommy behind or daddy. He took mommy's name of him, Rachel's name of him, and he brilliantly used it to reflect his own maturation and evolution beyond that past, just like his mother gave him a duality of a name. He took the same duality, but it's now his duality. And he's giving it to Menashe and Ephraim, each reflecting two different people, reflecting two different sides of his further development. I'll conclude by mentioning to you something that I once came across in Medrash Koheles, Medrash Rabban Koheles. Medrash says, I may have mentioned it to you in the past, I'm not sure. Medrash says, every person has three names. Every person has three names. One, the name you get from your parents. Number two, the name your friends call you. And number three, the name you are koneh la'atzmecha, name you acquire for yourself. What your parents call you, that's past, crucially important, and shapes your future. But then, you know, you go to school and you get nicknames or whatever, people call you names, positive names, but they, you know, friends have a way of, your social connection, they refer to you maybe differently from the names your parents call you, probably differently. Parents may have used certain, you know, names that are very, very, you know, loving and cutesy because you were a very cute two-year-old. You know, you go to school, 9, 10, 11, 15, you get another name. But eventually, as you mature in life, you acquire your own name based upon what you have accomplished in your life as a mature, autonomous adult. And I would suggest to you that the story of Yosef is exactly the story of that journey. From the name his mother gave him, to the name, not his friends, but Paro and Yosef gave him, to the name that he acquired by himself, which was the name of a man who could reappropriate the past and give a new meaning to the lives of his children.